Stuff Is Reddit podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast. Ben Vallis here. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're doing well. Bit of an anticlimactic free agency period for Brad Stevens and the Celtics thus far, unless you're a diehard Enes Kanter fan, which we'll get into. Nonetheless, there's plenty to talk about. The why not, the plan. There's a lot up in the air. Joining me for all of that and more, Mike, aka Wayne Spoonie. Spoons, how you doing, sir? Welcome back.
Thank you, man. I am doing great. I absolutely am totally prepared to talk about the plan or plans, whatever they may be, because I thought I knew, and then I saw we're, you know, offering the max extension to Smart. So I think we've got a lot to talk about, despite our only signing being the legend himself, Enes Kanter.
Yeah, that's right. With Schroeder potentially sort of hovering on the horizon there, and that could happen throughout the course of this podcast. So between you and me, we'll have to keep an eye on Celtics Reddit and Twitter there. To get into it, let's just start very broad here. The Celtics letting Evan Fournier walk and then not bringing in any supporting cast members, despite a multitude of candidates being available. Just in general, how are you feeling throughout the course of this free agency period?
So I really liked Fournier's fit on the team, right? I thought he fit very well, especially, of course, offensively with the Jays. But what I will say is, he represents sort of the same thing that Kemba represented, and that's a half measure, right? Ever since Kyrie bolted, and especially since Hayward bolted, I feel like we've kind of been scrambling for what should be the next phase of Celtics basketball. When Kyrie left, you know, perhaps it was more prudent to just say, you know what, we're shifting to full-on Jays, let's go a little younger and see what happens. But we brought in Kemba. It worked. I mean, it worked for the first year, right? We were two games away from the finals. And this year, it very much did not work. So I will say, I don't love short-term us not bringing in Fournier. I think the team will be, you know, will hurt next season for it. But I do think, well, I hope that it bodes for setting us up better long term, because $20 million a year for Evan Fournier, that's a big opportunity cost.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Brad Stevens of the Celtics have sort of come out saying, you know, our ultimate goal, our ultimate plan is to have cap flexibility moving forward into, you know, this season and subsequent seasons. And yet others say the Fournier contract at $20 million per year is a nice, first of all, is a nice talented player to have on the team. And it's a nice tradable size of salary that we could have, which, you know, in a way you could consider as flexibility. So, like, do you get a sense of what the plan is? Because it seems like there's people on either side of the fence there as far as whether to have or to have not signed Fournier.
So my sense is objective number one is to avoid the tax this season. Mm-hmm. Whether that's the owners being cheap or whether that is so we can go on a spending spree next offseason, you know, that is yet to be found out. But that seems to be the first part of the plan, for better or for worse. After that, I do think Brad's telling us the truth. He wants to be as flexible as possible, right? Everyone's fixated on Beal, but guys become available that you don't see happening. I mean, all it takes is Karl Anthony Towns to be like, you know what? I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. And do we have enough? Do we have the pile of assets to go get him? Maybe not, but I do think we're in a better position, at least financially, to make a deal like that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe we're in possession of all of our first round picks moving forward, which obviously helps to spice up any trade offers that we might offer there. Reddit user Sam Keifel wrote, "It's not a good plan at all, if I'm being honest with you. Letting good players walk for nothing makes no sense at all. Our depth is already thin to begin with." And then Ryan Bernardoni, Danger Cart, followed up on Twitter, you know, after the sort of events of the last couple of days, saying, "My actual read on the Celtics plan is that they are representing the threat of max space to corner the Wizards and scare off other suitors, with plan A being to acquire Beal via a trade or a 2022 sign and trade, going scorched earth for signing him outright being plan B, and Zach LaVine at 30% maybe being plan C there." So You're a bit of a cap guy, Wayne Spooney. Like, can you explain to us the, sort of the difference and the benefits of the Celtics in doing a sign and trade this season as opposed to going scorched earth and signing Beal outright at the end of the season?
All right, so there's really three paths we could do with Bradley Beal. And I will say the smart, if he accepts that extension, signing him outright is possible, but it is way, way, way more difficult. So I think we can almost eliminate that option from the table. But scenario number one is we trade from now until the trade deadline for him. And that means he's on his current contract, so all we have to do is match salaries. And we can do that very easily with Horford and Josh Richardson. So that Richardson deal could come in handy. That'd be a nice use of the TPE, because you can't stack a TPE with a player's contract, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't add on a TPE to Al Horford's contract to get to Bradley Beal's salary. But you can obviously stack Josh Richardson's contract with Al Horford to get to that number. So I think that's part of what Brad's thinking was, bringing in Richardson, other than, I guess, you know, he's kind of a decent player. So that's scenario number one. We go those two guys. But that would really require Beal to say, I'm signing with the Celtics. I'm forcing my way there no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. So that obviously costs us a ton in picks, probably Langford, hopefully not my guy Neesmith, but mm-hmm. it would be asset intensive, but not as asset intensive as signing him, because that would require us renouncing Smart, renouncing Richardson, probably renouncing Rob. But that's what Danger Cart's getting at, is in order for Beal to have that threat to say, I'm forcing my way to the Celtics, you almost have to be able to, you know, make that cap room and have that threat have some teeth. So yep. The other option is a sign and trade, which is what I think is probably going to end up being the most likely thing. And a sign and trade, the downside of that, unlike a midseason trade, is good thing is Beal will have to sign with the Wizards because they have his bird rights. So they can sign him for any number they want. They can sign him for the max. And then they'll trade him to us at that number. We'll have to match salaries. Ostensibly, because we did not sign Fournier, we may have a little bit of cap space, so we might not have to make up his full salary in contracts going back. But Horford will probably have to be in that deal to make up whatever the difference is. The problem is it hard caps us at $142-143 million. So I haven't looked at the tight numbers, but I mean, that's totally a possibility. We could absolutely do a sign and trade without bringing Fournier back. Had we signed Fournier, sign and trade's probably completely off the table. And I think when Brad said flexibility, what he's thinking is, okay, I've got the contracts to do it midseason. And now I've put myself in a position by not bringing back Fournier to execute a sign and trade next offseason if it comes available. And if Smart signs that extension, we can still probably trim enough salary to sign him outright. But man, it's going to get ugly. We're going to have like no first round picks until like 2040.
Next decade. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then some maybe.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate you laying it out that way, because there is a lot of confusion. There's a lot of noise out there as to, you know, not only what the plan is, but, you know, what steps need to be executed to get where we want to go. And I think that's what I really like about it, is that it's so open-ended and that there are multiple pathways to ultimately, you know, I guess the ultimate goal, it seems, is to get three all-stars, three high-caliber players on the team and then build around them in whatever way you can. But just to be at that point where it is so open-ended and there is so much flexibility compared to, you know, less than a year ago, a few months ago, really coming off the end of Ainge's tenure, where we were really sort of in a tight corner there as far as what was possible in terms of movements to get the team over the hump. My biggest question is like, what's the alternative? There's a lot of anxiety around the fan base at the moment. And like, personally, I even had to sort of walk away from like Twitter and Reddit for a couple of days just to sort of get my mind right. Like, and do we blow our load on every attainable free agent now while Tatum and Brown are young and under contract for a few more years? Like, if we'd signed Fournier and, say, Patty Mills, like, are we suddenly competing with the Nets the Bucks and the Lakers? And to those who say yes, are you telling me that Fournier and Patty Mills are the difference? Not really. So, you know, when you look at other teams like the Knicks and the Pelicans who have done that and have just sort of scrambled to grab whoever is available to build around their teams, like, they're not championship contenders, and yet they have no flexibility going forward, really, and the possibility of having disgruntled stars in the near future. So I like that we're being a little bit patient and that we're not just sort of pulling the trigger on the first thing that is available. But I understand the frustration from fans. It kind of reminds me of Christmas Day in my family. So quick side story. My sister and I are the obviously the children of my father, who was the oldest of his siblings. So he's one of four. And so there was a period of time where we were the only kids at family Christmas, and all of his brothers, all the relatives would bring presents for me and my sister, being the only kids. And it was like the best day of the year. There was, you know, tens of presents, dozens of presents for each of us under the tree, all directly for us, because no one else really cared as adults about getting presents. And then gradually, as my uncles, my father's brothers, had kids, the diversion of presents to my sister and I started to slowly get diluted and drift off towards my younger cousins, where now, to this day, I'm an adult. I'm sitting there watching all the kids open presents. There are no presents for me. A little bit free agency was like that this year. We didn't get to open any presents. We got to watch all of our little siblings and cousins open all the presents instead. That's very frustrating. But it is what it is. And, you know,
Not true. We got a pair of socks. We got Enos Kanter.
We did. Yeah, we got to stack up the undies drawer, which is always important.
Enos Kanter, I will say, pair of undies. You bring up several amazing points, but one thing I want to say is that our fan base, for whatever reason, has this weird entitlement to every single free agent that is available. Like, why don't we sign Kelly Oubre? Well, he signed for $13 million a year, and our max we can sign anyone is $10 million a year for the MLE. So we literally could not sign him. So I just don't understand. Like, I think it just comes with, like, you know, people want to get excited. They want it, to your point, they want to unwrap a present, even if it's a bad present, but it's in really nice packaging. They want to unwrap that thing. And sometimes it's not the best for the team. Sometimes it would be bad for the team, like Kelly Oubre at $13 million a year. Good luck, Charlotte.
Then you've got to do that thing where you sort of awkwardly have to pretend that you like the present to the person giving it to you, even though secretly you hate it and you want to give it back. It's a terrible position to be in. So
he's very good looking, I guess. Makes threes a little bit.
So I think, not that anyone listens to the advice that we give out on this pod, but my advice to the disgruntled Celtics fan would be, obviously, be patient. We haven't buried ourselves in a cap hole like some of our, you know, like the teams that I just mentioned, the Knicks and the Pelicans have done, and we still have left ourselves open to make the right decision when that opportunity becomes available. It's frustrating. That's not right now, but it's very likely down the road, and like we said, there are many options to get there.
Yeah, and I'd actually say Brad's done a good job of digging us out of the cap hell we were in at, you know, 2 months ago. I mean, that Kemba contract was real bad. We have a lot of flexibility. We can stretch Horford and only cost us $5 million a year for a few years. I mean, we're in a much better place cap-wise, for sure.
The Reddit user Queeferoni wrote, unpopular opinion, I do not want to commit $17 to $20 million per year for Evan Fournier. I'm completely okay with him signing elsewhere. The Knicks got him for, I think it was about $18, $19 million a year for, I think, 3 years, and then a team option on the fourth year there. Do you feel like that's a good signing for the Knicks? Do you feel like he's going to be a contributor and really, I guess, like, impact their seeding next season?
So we found Brad Stevens' burner. You know, he's trying to warn the fan base. Yeah, Queeferoni. Brad's got a weird sense of humor. So I think the Knicks are in a weird spot because they've sort of undermined what made them successful last season. They were one of the best defensive teams in the league. I think they were top five in defensive rating last year. They just signed Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier to basically be their starting backcourt. So their offense was putrid. It was like 29th, right? Yep. So they'll probably, especially Fournier, might prop them up to mid-teens, but what's it going to do to their defense, right? So you go from one of the best in the league on defense, right? You're winning games with your defense to being a middling offensive team and a middling defensive team because Randall can't guard anybody either. So I love Fournier as a player in a vacuum. I understand what the Knicks are doing, right? They got money. They have to spend it. You know, once you start extending guys, Barrett all of a sudden is going to come up for an extension. That eats into your cap space. So you do got to spend it when you have it. Mm-hmm. But I kind of think that, you know, they may not take a step backwards, but I don't think this puts them into some different echelon of team. And there's a possibility it makes them worse.
Yeah, and it's certainly not an incentive for their, you know, younger stars. I guess Barrett is you know, the one that you mentioned a second ago, to re-sign. It's like, oh, I'm going to stay here now because we signed Evan Fournier and Derrick Rose and Nerlens Noel. It's like, not sticking around for those guys. But I think just back on Fournier for a second there, the biggest point of confusion in not re-signing him, like we sort of touched on earlier, was like, why wouldn't you bring back that tradable contract? Well, a Reddit user, Rust, pardon me, wrote, depends on the player, really, because guys like Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams, they were 2 years, 35-ish, and both ended up being really negative assets and actually cost the Pelicans money to trade off of. Not saying that Evan Fournier necessarily fits in that category of player. He definitely has like a trendy NBA skill set for the modern game, but
definitely,
it's not a given that you're going to re-sign him and maintain sort of a net value out of that re-signing. So, like we said, there's so much up in the air. There's so much to talk about. It's a very divisive topic in terms of the direction that the Celtics are going in, but it sounds like, Spoonie, between you and I, we're sort of generally positive overall in the immediate outlook.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we've got a lot, as Brad said, this is going to be the new word of the day, right? Flexibility. We've got it now, which is a good thing.
We should talk about the Marcus Smart extension a little bit. And the latest news on that is from Mark Murphy, who tweeted a clarification. The Celtics await a response from Smart's agent, Jason Glushon, but are said to be willing to extend him for roughly $17 million a year over 4 years. What are your thoughts on that, Wayne Spoonie?
So I have mixed feelings. I will say, Smart has this narrative about him that he's one of the worst shooters in the NBA. Over the last 3 years, he shot roughly 35% from three. I mean, that's not great, but it's totally serviceable. His defense slipped a little bit last year, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, if Tim Hardaway Jr. is making $20 million a year, if Evan Fournier is making $20 million a year, I don't... You know, I think Smart's going to be an average starting point guard, and your average starter salary with the cap where it is now is, you know, a little over $15 million a year. So I think 17, it sounds like a lot, but I think people need to adjust their expectations a little bit. $15 million is like 12% of the cap, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so 17's like, you know, a little more than that, maybe less than 20% of the cap. I mean, it's not that much money in comparison to what you have available to you. So it sounds like a lot. Smart's a flawed player, but he's a very good player. So I'd be okay with it. And he's a Celtic, you know, he bleeds green. There's, you know, that's important to me as a longtime fan.
Also, just the notion of not letting yet another free agent walk out the door.
Right.
Or just even being open to the possibility of that. If we can re-sign him, we're in control of his fate, whether he sticks around or not. 17 is a nice chunk of change. Joe, who does this podcast regularly, always talks about having correct change for trades and how over the last few years, we've never really been in that position. 17, it's a nice number. It's got a nice ring to it. I think that we could potentially, not that I want to go down the rabbit hole of, you know, trading Smart too deeply, but it's a nice tradable chunk of change there. And just the notion of Smart actually being the defined starting point guard and not just like a fill-in in case of injury. We know he's a solid playmaker. We know he can execute out of the pick and roll really well. He's not last season, but in seasons prior, his pull-up three-point shooting percentage was actually like close to elite, which is bizarre. Not that we want him doing that as part of our regular offense, but like he does have shooting chops to some degree. And I'm excited to see him run the offense for Ime Udoka. I think there's enough sort of change afoot there to make that an interesting concept. And as opposed to someone like Dennis Schroeder, who we'll get to, I'd much rather have someone as solid as Marcus Smart as a starting point guard compared to whoever else is available, I suppose.
Yeah, and one thing I'll say is if we do make a big splash with for like Bradley Beal, we'll say, Smart locked up on that number for 4 years is going to be a lot more attractive as an asset than Smart as, you know, a guy who's under contract. You know, if we do the deal at the trade deadline, he's under contract for two more months, right? So if the Wizards are like, we don't want Smart, go get another asset for him. He's a lot easier to say, hey, Warriors, do you want this 27-year-old guy who's under contract for four more years? Toss us a, you know, a couple expirings and two firsts. You can have Smart, and then we can flip those two firsts over to the Wizards. So he's got a lot more value as a tradable asset if we do make a big deal like that, if he's locked up.
Yeah, so it's interesting that apparently, according to Mark Murphy, the offer's been made and the Celtics are waiting to hear back from his agent. You can imagine from Marcus Smart and his agent's perspective, they're like, well, what are your plans for me exactly? Because if you're going to trade me, then I'm not re-signing with you because I want to control my own destiny.
Yeah.
So Brad's a new president slash GM. Well, he's just the president. Let's be clear about that. It's going to be interesting to see how he plays that and whether or not, I guess he's like, willing to like lie to Marcus Smart or not, or and how that affects his relationship with players across the league. So we'll see. Time Lord is another player that's also up for extension. He's extension eligible. What do you think happens with him, not just as far as us wanting to keep him as our starting center, but as far as how that might affect sort of plan A, B, and C that we talked about earlier?
Yeah, so it gets real tricky on Time Lord's number because his cap hold, so the cap hold is essentially what we pretend your value is for when your contract ends. So next offseason, Time Lord's contract will end. He won't count against our cap for his actual contract number. It'll actually be more than that. So that's his cap hold. It's around $10 million. So he will eat into our cap next offseason, even though he's unsigned, for $10 million, which, you know, makes things a little tricky if we're trying to clear max space. I do not think we will extend him for the simple fact that it's such a risky proposition to extend him due to his injury risks that we will try to lowball him. And I think he will rightly want to bet on himself because if he stays healthy, he's such an impactful player that he will deserve, you know, if he stays healthy, he will deserve more than what we'd be willing to pay. So I see us kind of playing the string out, and we can always re-sign him next offseason. We have his bird rights. He's a restricted free agent. So if someone tries to hand him an offer sheet, we can always match it. So we're really in the driver's seat with bringing Time Lord back if we want to. So that's how I think that plays out. And, you know, he's always there as I think he's got some decent trade value as well.
Definitely. Yeah. So much potential. And yeah, if he can get over that health hump that's bothered him in the last few years, we're almost like the beneficiary of him not extending and betting on himself. Because if he does succeed in that and he does have a good year, then in the short term, like, that spells success for the Celtics this season, right? So it's almost a win-win for the Celtics. We can hardly fuck that up, I suppose. So, touch wood. We'll see. Yeah. Chris Forsberg wrote an article on this, and obviously I'm not going to quote it word for word, but he kind of made a case for extending Rob Williams in that, like, you could probably lock him in for like $13 or $14 million per year. And that his cap hold is around sort of $10, $11 million at the moment. And so, like, you're not really sort of affecting your more long-term cap sheet in that sense. And you're signing it with what we know to be a decent player, what we hope to be a healthy player more long-term. And then, of course, there's that trade value that you mentioned as well, Spoonie. So, going to be interesting to see how that works out. Anything else that you want to mention on the Time Lord or Smart situation before we move on?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think, yeah, I expect Smart to take the extension. I think that's about a good number for him. And, you know, we've had him for so long, I think he'll want to stick around. But to your point, you know, we'll see what Brad tells. If Brad lies to him, he'll definitely sign that extension. For Time Lord, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Interesting. And look, it'll probably all change by the time we put this podcast up on the internet there. So we'll see.
Yeah, the opposite will happen tomorrow, I'm sure.
So we talked about the plan, A, B, and C. who are we plugging into this plan? So, you know, whether it's Beal or an equivalent to Beal, who are the 2022 free agents and or disgruntled stars that the Celtics, you know, might make a move for?
I think other than Beal, I think LaVine just came out and said the Bulls are like disrespecting him.
Yeah, that's right.
LaVine has played in a way in the playoffs that makes me far more interested in him next to the Jays than I otherwise would have been.
Do you
in the Olympics. He's been defending. He's kind of been facilitating a little bit. He's doing things I didn't really think he had in him as a player. So I would not hate if LaVine goes scorched earth and says, you know, you could have renegotiated and extended me, Bulls, so I'm out of here. I would be totally open for Zach LaVine. I mean, he's going to be, I believe, an unrestricted free agent, so he can choose where he goes. And then I do think there's kind of, I think Minnesota's a ticking time bomb, man. I know they brought in Kat's best friend with D'Angelo Russell, but he's just not that good.
Yeah.
So I think he's kind of floating out there. I mean, I don't think, you know, the sub went crazy for Dame. I don't think that's realistic at all.
Well, yeah. And you talk about Olympic performances. Zach LaVine's looked great. Dame has not looked good at all. So in terms of what he looks like among a sea of stars, and, you know, it's not a sea of stars in Boston, but the Jays are up there. It's not a good paragraph on his resume, I suppose. You mentioned Karl Anthony Towns and the T-Wolves there. So a Reddit user, JD Morno, made a post. The Celtics are going to trade for Karl Anthony Towns. Of course, they labeled this post with the fluff flair. So, you know, take everything with a grain of salt here. But it basically goes on to say, you know, history is going to repeat itself. And before the 2008 season, the Celtics made trades for Ray Allen and KG. And then sort of goes on to compare the package for KG then to a similar package that we could provide now in the similar situation for Kat there. So I guess as far as like positionally, Spoons, like in terms of who we could acquire, what do you think's a better fit for the Celtics? Is it a semi-dominant big man or is it a high-scoring guard like Bradley Beal?
So I think people are overstating how bad Beal's fit is with the Celtics. Beal is a wonderful off-ball player. He runs off screens, he hits spot-ups, and he can do all the stuff you want, you know, a primary or secondary ball handler to do. So I think Beal would actually be a wonderful fit because it seems like we're really saying, Tatum, offense is yours, go nuts. So Beal would be great in that role. Overall, though, offensively, I do think Kat is a better fit because how do you defend a Tatum Kat pick and roll? I mean, yeah. Kat can roll, he can pop. You can't switch it because Tatum will roast your center, or Kat will just say, you know, Tatum will just back it out and Kat can post up whoever your small forward is guarding Tatum. So I think offensively, Kat would make the Celtics completely unstoppable. Our defense might take a hit. But,
yeah, I was gonna say he's not
tall
for his defense.
No, he's not.
Yeah. Taco Fall is tall as well.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, he spotted Westbrook in that one random game.
Yeah, well, what am I saying? He's dominant, of course, defensively.
Yeah.
On the other side of the fence, Reddit user ChineseFox97 wrote, I may be in the minority here, but I would much rather have most of our core intact and have about $20 million to spend in free agency on other role players that could help us rather than lose our entire roster for Beal. I could definitely see the upside to that. It's just looking back over like finals teams over the last sort of 10, 20 years outside of, I guess, the Pistons in 04, the one that sort of comes to mind, there's rarely been a team that's, you know, some teams have been successful in making it to the finals, but in terms of championship teams, they've got those sort of three max-ish players are sort of spearheading whatever team ends up winning the title that year. And I think that, you know, until we get a big enough sample size to the contrary, that's the direction we've got to head in, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'll say, why not just bring back Fournier if that's, you know, what you want to do, right? Yeah. I mean, are you going to get a better player for $20 million? You got to overpay for free agents, right? Because everybody's bidding on them. So if we wanted to do that, we should have just re-signed Fournier. We could have extended Smart, and we could have extended Time Lord, and we would have been in business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so moving on, Steve Bulpet, friend of the show, actually tweeted out recently, the Celtics are comfortable with Marcus Smart as a starter, underrated distributor, As for some questionable shots versus everything else he brings, it's like the old story. Tell me you've heard this story before, Wayne Spoon, because I haven't. The story goes, our father's crazy. He thinks he's a chicken. Have you taken him to a psychiatrist? Hell no. We need the eggs. Like, I get it. Like, but it lines up, but I've never heard that before.
I also have not. I mean, Steve's a little bit older than us. I mean, we're pretty old, especially for Reddit, but Steve's even older than us. So I have not heard that one, but I actually wrote a pretty detailed post about smart strengths and weaknesses as a primary ball handler. I think Tatum, that's actually, I think what I'm going to write about next is Tatum, what he will need to do to emerge as a true kind of hub of an offense. But I think Tatum will take another step as a primary ball handler. I think Horford being able to space the floor and pull the center out of the lane, and he's an amazing passer, and Rob's an amazing passer, and you think Jaylen will probably take another, you know, even if it's a small step in his playmaking. So Smart's kind of a flawed point guard in that he can't really break his man down and get into the lane like even someone like Dennis Schroeder can, but he's smart. When he gets an advantage, he knows how to take advantage of it, and he's got amazing vision. He really does have underrated vision. So, and man, we could have a hell of a defense with Smart starting at point guard instead of Kemba. So, I like it. I think it's worth it to see. I mean, you got to see what you got at some point with Smart at point guard, and I think it's finally time. Let's just see how he does for a season. We're not, you know, we're not winning the championship. We might as well see what we got.
Yeah, absolutely. And your comment there on Tatum as a you know, primary or backup ball handler there, I feel like in the last two come from behind victories that the Team USA have done, unfortunately against Australia very recently, which we won't talk about, partially the catalyst for the comeback for Team USA has been Tatum not shooting so much and actually driving and dishing and things like that. It's clearly a strength of his. It's not something that he executes very regularly. Hopefully Ime Udoka can like hone in on that. We saw it, I guess, a little bit last year under Brad Stevens. Hopefully that's sort of more of a repeated occurrence in this season, because we're definitely going to need it. Can you make a case for the current roster as like a 4 or 5 seed as they currently stand?
I absolutely can make a case for this.
Let's hear it.
And I'm prepared to.
Okay, good.
Okay. So I think if you're replacing Kemba with Smart full time, and you're going big on the wings, let's say Nesmith starts, if Richardson starts, Brown, Tatum, Rob, with Horford instead of Tristan Thompson. So our defense was the reason we were bad last year, right?
100%, yes.
We were 13th in defensive rating.
That's top very surprising.
Half of the league. Yeah, isn't it? So if you're saying, I think that that lineup could be a monster on defense, an absolute monster, right? The offense, I don't think it'll get any worse. I mean, it's not like we were good on offense last year. We were around 13th, actually. We were 10th. So I don't think the offense will get too much worse. So if you're saying our defense is going to be a lot better, the Sixers were about the 15th best offense and the second or third best defense, and they had the best record in the East. So if we can get up into the top five on defense, even if our offense is kind of middling, that's, you're close to a 50-win team.
Yeah, that's an exciting notion. And then I think if you, not that we should expect a bump from one of either Pritchard, Nesmith, or Langford, but if you get that, or if you get a slight bump from two of them, suddenly the fact that we didn't sign anyone impactful in free agency, it's like, well, it doesn't matter because we've got these impactful guys that we've had all along. We're starting to sound like a bit of a homer here, but that's the sort of stuff that we've got to hope for our team to really be humming along. And yeah, I mean, we're correcting our defensive inefficiencies, really. And at the same time, in not signing anyone, we're giving a platform for those three young guys I just mentioned to succeed. And if nothing else, become tradable. So, fourth or fifth seed, I think there's a lot to consider there, like just how is the Bulls roster, for example, going to fit together? Was the end of the Hawks season fluky, or you know, they're going to be that good? Yeah, there you go. These are the answers we're looking for. So, but you can definitely make a case, and I think you've made a strong case there. We are going to move on because I've got a bit of a laptop battery issue here. I'm down to 9%. Started with 100, so something's going on here. So, another tweet from Ryan Bernardoni. He said, I'll just say that if the Celtics are playing for 2022 free agency, they better fucking land the big fish, because if they punt this season and then lose their free agency by prioritizing, lose their free agents by prioritizing someone else who doesn't come, you can just start planning the inevitable Jays trades, which is maybe the most grim thing I read on the internet over the last week. And it was probably the tipping point for me, just sort of shutting the laptop and stepping away for a little bit. Do you see it as a high risk at this point for the Jays to eventually depart based on what's happened or not happened over the past week? Or I personally think it's way too early to start making that declaration.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that it's way too early to start making that declaration. And what I will say is it depends on how much they trust Brad. Because if we strike out in 2022, 2023 is absolute. No one's going to want to hear this, but 2023 is absolutely loaded free agency class, and we would have totally have max space, and they'd still, even Jalen would be under contract for another year after that, I believe. So if Brad can convince them, like, look, I know we struck out, you know, maybe he grabs short term, like the Lakers used to just give KCP 1 year, $18 million deals to keep him on the team. You know, if we can grab some guys like that, stay competitive in the fourth, fifth seed, Neesmith pops or Romeo pops or something like that, and we say, you know, we'll hit in 2023, then I think we're in good shape, and that's 2 years down the line. So I'm not going to start freaking out about the Jays leaving just yet. And if the Jays do request a trade, that will suck, but we will get the mother load of assets if we trade one of them. So it's not like we're going to be left holding the bag. Like, we better not let them walk, because if they let them walk, I might become a Hawks fan or something. But, you know, either trade them or build around them.
That's a whole nother podcast. What team are you going to jump ship to? We've seen it, you know, in recent NBA history, these sort of divas, your Hardens, your Durants, who have that kind of leverage to not only request a trade, but request a trade to a specific team. We rarely see that with players who are on their rookie extension contract. The Jays are too young. I don't think they have got that clout yet. Like, maybe Tatum is working towards that point, but I don't think that they're at, like, trade me to this team now sort of level. I think that we can work with them. We heard that they were consulted and smart as well on the Udoka signing. You've got to imagine that Brad sat down with them and was like, this is the plan. We want you guys to be on board with this. If we can just be patient for a little bit, then I think that's going to pay dividends, you know, in the near future. You've got to imagine they were consulted and are aware of the team's trajectory.
I mean, you really think they're going to give them 1 year, right? I mean, I think, like, hey, do you guys want this coach? Yeah. Okay. Oh, it didn't work for 1 year. I'm out of here. I mean, that just seems... I don't know. I'm not ready to sound the alarm yet.
We better move on, because my battery life is sounding its alarm. The Enes Kanter signing, a 1 year minimum deal, averaged a double double last year with the Blazers, 11 points, 11 boards, and just 24 minutes per game. Fongos immediately declared, this makes us contenders. What are your thoughts on the Kanter signing?
So I don't think Kanter's very good, but what I will say is, even if he's not very good, he's a massive upgrade on Tristan Thompson. Mm-hmm. Tristan Thompson was one of the worst players at finishing putbacks. Kanter led the league on number of putbacks, so he's a wonderful offensive rebounder, and he rebounds where he's in a position to put them back. He was around 70th percentile finishing putbacks. Tristan Thompson was absolutely one of the worst roll men in the league. He was 18th percentile at finishing pick and rolls. That's terrible. There's like point guards who are better than him. Kanter, totally acceptable, well above average at the 70th percentile. So Kanter, not very good. Huge upgrade on Tristan Thompson, who is our second big man. So I like Kanter as a third big man. He's got a big body. You know, he can defend Embiid a little bit in the post. So even if we signed him just for that matchup, it's a worthwhile signing for the veteran minimum.
Extremely talented third string big man, really, who situationally can be bumped up into a second string man there. So no issues, and obviously no real impact on the cap situation, given that it is a vet minimum there. So and for 1 year. So no issues there. And, you know, from a meme standpoint, from a social media standpoint, I believe Forsberg and Kanter also had their own podcast there as well. So there's a lot to gain from this signing. But certainly not the gift we wanted to unwrap throughout free agency so far. But we'll take what we can get, it seems. We need those socks for the sock drawer.
That's right.
Some quick missed points before we wrap this one up. So Woj announced today the Milwaukee Bucks assistant coach Ben Sullivan has agreed to a deal to join Ime Udoka's new coaching staff with the Boston Celtics. Sullivan is another in a long line of well-regarded Mike Budenholzer assistants. Did you know anything about this guy before today? Any thoughts on that signing at all?
Top five assistant coach in the league, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Easily.
Yeah. I did not.
Apparently, he's like a shot doctor, which, you know, for Romeo Sweet. Langford could be important. I looked at a photo of him today, and my only thought was it looks like he can control things with his mind. He looks like he has telekinesis. I don't know why. That's just the first thought that popped into my mind. So whether or not that benefits the Celtics, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm in, baby.
And just quickly, I guess, to wrap up, what are your thoughts on the notion that Wick and the ownership team are cheap and are perpetually unwilling to spend enough for this team to form a contender?
I think that there's some truth to that. I really do think. I think they're in the lower half of richest owners. I mean, I understand there's being financially responsible to maintain flexibility, but then there's also an unwillingness to spend. And we have had some teams recently where I think that, you know, their reluctance to spend might have held us back a little bit. That said, I mean, if they're in the next couple of years, they can totally change that narrative, and I hope they do. But I do think there's some truth to it. But I don't think it's fatal to being a championship team yet.
Yeah, you would hope that in line with the plan that we've spent this whole podcast discussing, that they are willing at some point to jump into the tax if necessary to form that team. It certainly seems like they're poised to do so, and that there's maybe more to their decision in not doing so in the last year or two. But we'll see. We've got to wrap this one up. Wayne Spoonie, are there any other points you want to bring up before we end the show?
I will just say I hope that we sign Dennis Schroeder. I think he'd be a nice fit for what we need off the bench. But other than that, I do not have anything else for you, Ben. It was a good time. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for coming on. All right, look, for a period where absolutely no NBA basketball has been played, there's certainly a lot to discuss. That's definitely going to do it for this one. Wayne Spoonie, love your work, mate. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Or okay. One guy.
Thanks for listening. If you're a fan of the show, subscribe, rate, share, all that good stuff. We will be back right after the upcoming Summer League game. Until then, go Celtics. Peace.